This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Rhys Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Washington on this report card, Denton, had the highest marks you can have for ownership and head coach. You want to talk about just, you know, overall a massive organizational change. Ownership, Washington was, you know, graded by the NFLPA and its players as an A. Now, there are a couple of A-plus ownership groups, Miami, Minnesota, and Atlanta being the top three. And then there are several A groups, but Washington was in that second tier of A groups. But I think it's the head coach thing where Dan Quinn was the number one head coach in their rankings among the players. He got an A-plus. There were other coaches that got an A-plus, but he got the most votes. He was number one on the list of head coaches, followed by actually Raheem Morris in Atlanta and then Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, Andy Reid, and Dan Campbell in Detroit. Those were the head coaches that were all listed as A-plus head coaches. So good for them. You know, honestly, this matters. I don't know that this is me just thinking out loud in terms of, you know, the players saying these things. You would, well, how does that manifest itself? Well, in free agency, you know, in re-signing your own players. Do they want a better work atmosphere? You know, Washington was an absolute S show. It was an absolute undesirable place for much of the league for so many years. That, along with being a losing team, did not help them unless a player was desperate. Or, like in the example of a John Allen, they were from here. But in thinking about how these marks manifest themselves when you have a winning team and a quarterback who's desirable to play with, I don't know that it's that much of an impact. The fact that they have a head coach and ownership that are as high level, that helps a lot too. But like if they were a 12-5 team and their head coach was a B and ownership was a C, but their quarterback was an A+, you'd still have Washington as an increased, you know, place of destination for people. So, yeah, it's good for them. What do you think about it?
I was thrilled just looking up and down this list. You know, I think Dan Quinn getting an A+, being number one overall, is fantastic. I think Josh Harris is a miracle worker. I mean, going from last place 2 years in a row to now being 11th and like working on some of those key things that we had, I think, universally discussed as a fan base, like the treatment of families being significantly better, you know, the food being significantly better. And I think those are two really, really important things. So I thought they did a hell of a job. And I mean, how about ownership being ranked 8th in the NFL because it's clearly a guy that cares and wants to build a winning football team rather than the other guy that wanted money in his pocket so he could run around and be a scoundrel.
Ownership was ranked 18th last year, and they were a B. The head coach last year, in 2023, Ron Rivera was a C, 31st in the league. And then you go back to the year before that, where they were ranked. Let's just see where ownership was with Snyder owning the team. Yeah, I think it was dead last.
It had to have been dead last, if not really close to dead last.
Yeah, actually, it doesn't look like it doesn't look like back then they actually ranked ownership and head coach. So that's a new category here in the last 2 years. But Washington was 32nd among 32 teams on the report cards here before this year. So good for them. Look, it's a commitment from the top. We understand that. When you have a commitment from the top, and by the way, you have normal people committed, then you can end up with these kinds of results. Yeah. I wanted to play something that I heard early this morning, Denton. You know, the big news really right now in the offseason, Myles Garrett's a story. The Indy Combine will start getting into the player testing as well, and we'll be able to talk about some of that. I know you want to talk about some of that here on the show. But the quarterback carousel is going to be a big part of this offseason conversation. Where do the quarterbacks land? You know, where do the quarterbacks that are getting drafted, like Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, get drafted? Where does Sam Darnold go? Where does Aaron Rodgers go? Where does Justin Fields go? Where does, you know, even a potential guy like Kirk Cousins end up? But the number one is where does Matt Stafford go to? And we've learned a lot more about the Matt Stafford situation over the last week or so. You know, I had Diana Russini on the show on Friday, and, you know, she talked about the contentious dialogue between Matt Stafford and the Rams when they restructured his deal last summer, and that it wasn't the easiest thing to get across the finish line. Well, we've heard that now multiple times. But right now, the question is, will the Rams deal Matt Stafford or will they keep him? This was Sean McVay yesterday weighing in on this.
You talk about the elephant in the room. These are the things that are really challenging because there's no discrepancy on us wanting him to continue to lead the way and be our quarterback. The interesting and the challenging dilemma and dynamics within this are, hey, how do you continuously as a head coach look at the short term and the long term and be able to figure out what does that really look like? There's no dispute, and let's not get it twisted in regards to anybody wanting him to be our quarterback. Now, there's layers to it. And as you try to put together the puzzle for your football team, you have to be able to say, hey, how do we continuously build? How do we support him? How do we make sure that he's getting, you know, what is his worth relative to those things? And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we had something in mind, he had something in mind, and nobody was right or wrong. And then ultimately you're saying, hey, there's a ton of interest because this guy's an incredible player. And you know, we've had conversations where he could probably play however much longer he wants, but it's been on a year to year in terms of our dialogue. You know, is that one? Is that two? Only he can answer that. But there does have to be an element of understanding, well, what does that future look like without this freaking G that's been our quarterback for the last 4 years? And there's no right or wrong way to go about it. But I do think for us to be able to make the most educated decision in terms of, all right, you know, the cash budget that we operate on, the draft comp that you would get in return, you know, you just need to be able to have all the parameters to at least explore it. And I think the most important thing that's reported out there is, you know, when we had these conversations prior to the Super Bowl, I think the important thing was let's be clear, open, and honest. And this isn't that we're trying to be able to figure out, you know, what is the next right move, but let's at least have all the parameters relative to you and Jimmy Sexton being able to talk to teams that have called on you. Don't want to have to do anything in secret. Want to make sure that we're all abreast of the situation, even though the first goal in mind is to have you come back here as the quarterback. But that's where we're really trying to measure all those things. He and I have had great dialogue throughout this process. I know where we want it to be able to end up, but these decisions aren't made in a vacuum, and that's kind of the challenging part about it. But love this guy, and he's been incredible for us.
I mean, I love Sean McVay. How long was that? That was everybody 2 minutes, right?
That was 2 minutes, and I felt like I learned nothing in that 2 minutes.
I mean, that was like 2 minutes of word salad. Like, he went round and round. I mean, to try to come up with a takeaway other than, of course, there's a chance they're going to trade him. But, I mean, you don't learn anything. It's up to the two sides to figure out a number. You know, at the end of the day, we had something in mind. He had something in mind. There's no discrepancy on us wanting him to continue to lead the way he's led as our quarterback. But the interesting and the challenging dilemma and the dynamics within this, I mean, there's just a lot going on there. I think that there's a chance that they feel like they would be selling at the right time. That's my new take on Matt Stafford. Hear me out. I think Matt Stafford's a great quarterback. I think there's no chance they get to within, you know, 20 yards, was it, on that final play from beating the Eagles in the snow at Lincoln Financial. And Matt Stafford was the key to that comeback. He was outstanding during that comeback. Matt Stafford, you know, they were injured early. He had some terrific football games. You know, down the stretch, their final three games, as they were trying to win out to win the division, you know, they had to win out to win the division to beat out Seattle. They both finished 10-7, right? Were they both 10-7? They didn't clinch before the final week of the season. I think they both finished 10-7, and the Rams had to win out to win the division. So when you looked at the games they played San Francisco, the Jets, and Arizona. I don't think I picked up on this before when we've had conversations. Now, I know that there were some weather issues in New York in the game that they played against the Jets in the Meadowlands on December 22nd. They beat the 49ers, not a very good team, 12-6. Stafford was 16-27 for 160 yards. He didn't turn the ball over. Against the Jets on the road, they won 19-9. He was 14-19 for 110 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. That game, if you recall, was very losable. I think the Jets were driving down 16-9 late. And they turned it over, and then they got a field goal to sort of extend the lead to 10. And then in the season finale, they played on that Saturday night. I actually had Arizona in that game, I remember, plus the points. They barely beat the Cardinals 13-9 in that game. He was 17-32 for 189 yards. He completed, in two of his last three games, he completed 59.3% and 53.1%. of his passes. He wasn't very good in a win at New Orleans. He didn't play very well against the Eagles when they got blown out. That was in late November. Now, he was incredible in that 44-42 win over Buffalo. Incredible. And I thought he played great in the playoff win over Minnesota. But the truth is, that game was won as much by the Rams' defense and by Sam Darnold's complete, you know, meltdown, as much as it was by Matt Stafford. But Stafford was really good early in that game. They came out, if my memory serves me correctly, they moved the ball right down the field twice and scored, to take a double-digit lead, and they never really looked back in that game. He was 19 of 27 for 209, two touchdowns. And the game was never in doubt, in part because Sam Darnold got sacked like 30 times in the game. It was like 10 times, wasn't it? I think Sam Darnold got sacked. Hold on. 9 times. He got sacked 9 times for 82 yards. His average loss was just over 9 yards on 9 sacks. That was honestly one of the worst football games I've seen a starting quarterback play in a long time. I think if they thought Matt Stafford was going to be Matt Stafford consistently, you can't ever say that a quarterback at 37 years old is still ascending. But if you think you're going to get the best of Matt Stafford here at the end of his career another year, I don't think there's any chance that this comes to where it's come to. You pay him. He's a G, as McVay said. You don't have a solution. Garoppolo's not even under contract. And by the way, remember Garoppolo, didn't he play in a game and play very well for them? Was that the last game of the year? Maybe the last game of the year for them. Didn't Garoppolo play in a game that Matt Stafford was out in and play really well this year? Or am I thinking about something else?
I'm looking up. He did play, I mean, he played okay. I wouldn't say that he played really well, but he played that final game of the season because the Rams had already clinched, and he had 334 yards and two touchdowns and a pick on 41 attempts. He was 27 to 41.
That's right. So the Arizona game was the next to last game of the season, so they clinched that game. That's what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, right, because they played Seattle, and Seattle had a chance, right? No, that game was a meaningless game. Obviously, it was meaningless.
Yeah, Garoppolo
they had already clinched.
Meaningless.
But Garoppolo lit it up, didn't he? What did you just say he threw for?
He was 27 of 41, 334, two touchdowns and a pick. And
right.
They lost.
But remember, they were weren't they down in that game and he led them back and they took the lead late in the game? I remember saying Garoppolo played pretty well in that game. I'm not suggesting that they're going to go out and re-sign Jimmy Garoppolo to be the answer. I just wonder whether or not the only reason you would move on from Matt Stafford with a playoff team, a team that won a playoff game and was as close as anybody was to knocking off Philadelphia in this postseason. They were closer to knocking off Philadelphia than we were, okay? They had the ball down 28-22, and they were deep in Philadelphia territory in a driving snowstorm at the end of that game. The only way you don't figure it out with him, or that you're questioning whether or not you should figure it out with him, is that they believe they'd be selling at the right time. That they believe that it's about to change and he's about to decline. Other than that, I think it's moronic to not figure it out. You cannot win in this league without high-level quarterback play. I mean, you can't do what they did this year with the roster they have without high-level quarterback play. But his performances, other than in the postseason, towards the end of the regular season, were not great. I mean, is it possible that they're moving on from him, or they're willing to move on from him because they think they'd be selling at the right time? I think you have to think that way, or you wouldn't move on from him.
They just don't seem to have a plan. So, like, I get if that is what they're thinking, I understand that. That thought process makes sense, but you would at least think that you would have something waiting in the wings as some form of long-term plan or solution to that. Just selling at the right time, I don't know if is the greatest idea.
It's not about selling at it's selling at the right time from this perspective, though, Denton. It's that they believe they're getting over on the acquiring team. They believe that he's about to decline. They've seen something that says his best days are clearly behind him. We got every ounce of Matt Stafford at a high enough level to get us to a postseason and win a game, win a division, win a playoff game, and we don't see it moving forward. We think it's about to decline and quickly. It happens to quarterbacks.
It definitely happens, but still, I mean, I would feel way more comfortable if I was them if I had something on the other side. Jimmy Garoppolo is not going to do it.
But that's my point, is the fact that they don't have an answer and you're willing to do this means they're willing to put up with an answer that none of us would say. Look, you know how I feel about Aaron Rodgers. I think he'd be a perfect fit for McVay, and if he played like he was playing at the end of last year, that they'd still be a threat in the NFC West for sure. You know, taking the off the field stuff off the equation. I think McVay wouldn't allow. I think he'd have enough respect for McVay. Maybe. Who knows? Enough. But I think that you only move on from Matt Stafford. The first thing you've got to answer is, do we have a solution that could give us at least what we just concluded with? You don't move on from him if you don't think that. You figure it out.
Does this almost feel a little Saquon Barkley-esque? Because, like, I get what you're saying. If they think it's going to be a massive drop-off, it makes total sense.
His last three regular season games were very average against not very good teams.
Yeah, but I'd feel way better about the postseason performance than I would regular season.
I know, but they didn't need him to do much against Minnesota.
No, but they needed him to do a lot against Philadelphia.
He didn't do it early in that game. He did it late, though.
He did, but he still did it.
Yep.
Whereas no one else really seemed to outside of, you know, Jaden for a very small, like, even Mahomes didn't have the kind of success
that's true.
That Stafford did. So my thinking is that this is almost like a Saquon situation where they still think he's feasible, if you will. They just don't want to pay him the number that he is going to command, and he's going to command a big-time number. So I almost wonder if it's more that than thinking he's going to take like a Peyton Manning-esque nosedive when Manning's neck stopped working.
Right. Well, you did have that. But didn't you? The Matt Stafford injuries have been elbow related, right? In recent years?
A couple years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that injury was 2022. When he played 9 games, he played 15 games in 23 and then 16 this year with that, the one being rest at the end of the season.
He also had a lower back issue this year. Get a lower back issue this year. This one to me is the biggest head scratcher. You let bygones be bygones if the last round of negotiations were contentious. After, you know, you look at the landscape and you're like, okay, but we have to have somebody. And Sean McVay did essentially say that in his 2-minute, you know.
You said word salad. It was like word vomit. He basically said, we want Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford wants to be here, but we also don't want Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford also does not want to be here, and we're kind of somewhere in the middle.
Right. That's exactly what it was. He said everything. I mean, there were many options to take out of that. All right. You wanted to get into a certain position in the combine, right?
Yeah, I was talking to some people yesterday. I heard something that really caught me off guard as it relates to the running backs in this year's draft.
Let's do that next. Indy Combine, getting into player workouts, interviews, the whole thing. Dan Quinn's going to speak today, correct, Denton, 1 o'clock?
Yep, right after our show, which don't love that for us, but I believe Chris Russell will carry some of that. I don't know if he'll carry all of it, but I believe he'll carry some of it.
All right, so stay tuned for that, and we'll certainly talk about whatever he says. We'll get more out of him than we got out of Adam Peters, although, you know,
hopefully,
we had some good Adam Peters from his interview with JP yesterday. All right, what did you want to bring up about the running back position?
So, you know, I love the combine, right? I love all things NFL draft, and I was doing some research for my latest Denton's Office video, which is on the Team 980's YouTube channel and published early this morning. Just kind of, I called it Combine for Dummies, so people that are not as interested in the Combine have people to keep an eye on this weekend. I think it's a lot of fun. But in doing some of this research, Kevin, obviously a name that's popped up a bunch for the Commanders and the Commanders fan base that is really, they've latched onto him, is Travion Henderson at Ohio State, because we know that the team needs another running back, and preferably a running back one, if they decide to, which they likely will, go a different direction from a Brian Robinson, right? You got Eckler on a 2-year deal, but you need someone that can carry the bulk of the load. So I was just talking around to people that, you know, do the draft thing almost exclusively for a living. And, you know, when you look at big boards of like ESPN, like Mel Kiper's big board has Travion Henderson as running back 6. Pro Football Focus, I think, has him as running back 6 as well. But I was talking to a guy yesterday and said he might not even be available at 29. Teams are going to start to fall in love with Travion Henderson they see Jahmyr Gibbs in Travion Henderson. I think he'd be a perfect fit in this offense, but now I'm like sitting here thinking this dude might not even be around when the Commanders draft in round number one.
Well, unless you think you're getting Jahmyr Gibbs, I don't want them to select a running back in round one. But there's another reason for this, and you may have a different perspective, and I could be thinking about a different player, but I don't think I'm thinking of a different player. During the playoff run, you know, when Judkins was getting the bulk of the carries, as he was for much of the year, he was a transfer from Ole Miss to Columbus. And Travion Henderson, by the way, was a big-time recruit, had a big-time debut as a freshman. People thought Travion Henderson as a freshman, that this was potentially going to be one of the great backs in Ohio State history. This was going to be Archie Griffin, number two. And Judkins came in this year, and he was the majority guy. Not that Travion Henderson didn't play and didn't have some big plays, but I remember several stories and several conversations talking about how welcoming Travion Henderson was, how what a great teammate he was, even though he was, you know, I think Ryan Day basically went to Henderson in the offseason and said, are you okay with this if we go out and get Judkins in the portal? And he was fine with it. I think he's a team captain. I'm pretty sure that is the case. By the way, we know that our team loves team captains. So that may be a part of it as well. Although a lot of that wouldn't factor into him going in the first round. You're going to take him in the first round because you believe you're getting Jahmyr Gibbs. Do you see him as Jahmyr Gibbs?
I don't know that I see him as explosive as Jahmyr Gibbs,
right?
But I definitely feel like he is a guy that is going to be the steal of the running back class. While everyone's looking at Ashton Jeanty, the more and more that I look back at the way that he played this past season, I think he's really, really good. He has never been the receiving threat that Jahmyr Gibbs was when he was in college, but he averaged 7.1 yards a carry this year. So it was his second lowest carries in his career at Ohio State, but he still eclipsed 1,000 yards on 144 carries. I think he's incredibly dynamic. I think he has really good vision. The vision is what would excite me, because that was the biggest issue, it felt like, towards the end of the season with Brian Robinson in particular. It felt like he wasn't seeing the field the way that he needed to properly decide which hole I'm supposed to be going through and then attacking the hole, whereas I don't think you'll have an issue with that with Travion Henderson.
Running backs are going to get focused on a lot more than they have in recent years because of the incredible performances of the, at the position. The running back position is back. I mean, it's been resurrected here the last couple of years. And obviously we had the two big signings in free agency last year with Saquon going to Philadelphia and Derrick Henry going to Baltimore. This year's backs in free agency include guys like Aaron Jones and J.K. Dobbins and Najee Harris, Nick Chubb. Let me just tell you, I've always been a massive Nick Chubb fan. He just can't stay on the field. But when he's been healthy, he's been borderline elite. Javonte Williams is available. I've always loved him. I loved him coming out of Carolina. I think he's had some moments in the NFL, but he's another guy that hasn't always been healthy. So the point is, you don't have a Saquon Barkley. You don't have a Derrick Henry in free agency. But this draft is considered to be a good running back draft, in part because people were talking about guys like Caleb Johnson and Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson as guys that you could get on night two or potentially early on day three. The back that I love, and I've told you this before, I really like Caleb Johnson out of Iowa. Look, I think Ashton Jeanty's an absolute stud, and I think he proved that in that Penn State game, that competition. He proved it in the Oregon game too early in the season. I like him a lot. He's going to be the first back taken. I don't see that changing. Do you? Although
he's huge.
He's the Derrick Henry combination. He's not as tall as Derrick Henry, but in terms of like the size and the combination of power and speed. O'Hampton from Chapel Hill, to me, looks like the number two pick in the draft, running back,
yes,
behind Jenty, if not Caleb Johnson. But so you're starting to see Travion Henderson move. How many backs are going to go in the first round?
So I was told, and this was the same person that said they think Travion Henderson is going round one, or it wouldn't be crazy if he goes round one. I was told three. It would be Jenty, Hampton, and Travion Henderson going round one, which this would be the first year in a long, long time where there's even a potential that as many running backs as quarterbacks going in round number one could be real.
I mean, I'm looking at Mel's latest that he put out yesterday, and he only has Jenty going in the first round.
He does. I don't know that I love Kuiper all that much. I think he's fine. I don't know that I love.
Close your mouth. Do not talk about him that way.
I mean, there's some other guys that I would be really interested in.
I like ET in Georgia. Let me give you a back like that down the list.
Yeah.
He's in this draft, right?
Yeah, ETN will be in this draft. I like DJ Giddens out of Kansas State, 6'1", 212. Yep. He can do a lot of different things. Khalil Mullings had a really good year at Michigan. He's 6'2", 233. ETN's just a little smaller. He's 5'9". Yeah, I didn't realize that Ashton Jenty's 5'9". He played so much larger than that.
Tough.
But he's only 5'9".
What is he weight-wise, 210?
As of now, 215. That'll obviously change in a couple of days. Running backs, quarterbacks, wide receivers are all on Saturday. You get defensive linemen and linebackers tomorrow. You get tight ends and DBs on Friday. Quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers Saturday. And then offensive linemen on Sunday at the Combine.
The guy that, you know, became a story during the playoff and really before that in the Big 12 championship game, Cam Scadabo, he is – so I told you this in the playoff game. He was phenomenal in the playoff game against Texas, which was the best or the most exciting game of the 12-team playoff. And the game that he had, especially in the fourth quarter and in the overtime, is incredible. He was, you know, gassed and hurt and the whole thing. But I don't love his vision. I don't think he's got, like, high-level running back vision. I just think he is an absolute bulldozer and a competitor. Love that part of him. And, by the way, can catch the football, too. Where is he on the running back list? I'm just curious.
So PFF has him running back number three. Your boy Mel has him running back number five behind Caleb Johnson at three and Judkins.
Yeah.
Four. I honestly, Cam Scadabo would be great if it was like 06 and people used fullbacks, because he's like that perfect. He can bruise you. He's going to get 3 yards when you need two, and he can catch out of the backfield, kind of like Kyle Juszczyk. I don't know at the NFL level, though. You're right. I don't know that you can just bruise your way through some of these big interior lines.
I mean, a guy like him, because he's such a badass competitor, and he believes so much, you know, he's going to do whatever it takes. But I just don't think he's got that inside the tackles vision. And he certainly doesn't have, like, game-breaking speed.
Now, there are only a few guys at the top of this that have, like, legit game-breaking speed.
Henderson and Hampton.
I like Caleb Johnson the same way that you do.
Who's going to run the fastest 40 in this Indy Combine?
That's a great question. Probably a receiver.
Didn't we, the guy that we had on yesterday, didn't he say he thought it was going to be Isaiah Bond?
He did say that he expects Isaiah Bond to have a big, big-time 40-yard dash.
Yeah.
Something in those waters in Texas, I guess. A DB might surprise you, though. I don't know that anyone's going to run a Xavier Worthy 4-2-1 or whatever he ran.
All right. Well, look, running back right now, as far as our team goes, Brian Robinson Jr. and Austin Eckler are under contract. You know, Eckler's coming back. He was too important in what they accomplished this year, and you just keep your fingers crossed that he can stay healthy. Brian Robinson Jr. is, you know, I think he has for our fan base become of a bit of a polarizing topic. You know, I think everybody feels you could do better than Brian Robinson Jr., but I think you could also do better overall up front in run blocking. If they came back without upgrading at the running back position, but they upgraded significantly a wide receiver, I would trust that they're okay with that and that the running back situation will be fine. There were moments early in the season where we were saying, wow, the combination of Brian Robinson Jr. and Austin Eckler is really, really great. I mean, there were games in which, you know, you had all three, you know, Daniels and Eckler and Robinson Jr. all making an impact. I mean, Brian Robinson Jr. had some games this year. You know, the Tennessee game was the game where he busted one early, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
No, the Giant game, he busted one early.
I think both. But the Giant one was first when it was like a... I don't know if it was a fourth and one, but it was like a third and one. You thought he just barely got it, and all of a sudden he bumps it outside and he goes for 40.
Here are the games. His biggest games of the season. Week 2 against the Giants, 17 carries, 133 yards. Week 4 against Arizona, right, 21 carries, 101 yards. 12 for 71 against Carolina in a game that, you know, he didn't get much, you know, in the way of touches because the game was... lopsided. And then Tennessee, 16 carries, 103 yards. After that, it was kind of tough sledding. He was okay in the Atlanta game. Man, I'll tell you what, with Jaden Daniels as a quarterback and as a run threat, I just feel like the back should have had more consistent production. If they, I mean, we've asked this question before, you know, if I told you that they only got one a major upgrade at running back or a major upgrade at wide receiver, which would you take? In some ways, I think I'd lean on the running back in the running back direction because I feel like Kingsbury was able to scheme people open with the group that they had. I think he's going to be able to scheme people open regardless of who they have. If you told me you had a big time, you know, impactful back like Bijan Robinson or Jahmyr Gibbs, Henry, McCaffrey, you know, Saquon. I mean, it's kind of, you know, where that's dreamland. But imagine if you had one of those guys. If Travion Henderson's Jahmyr Gibbs, I'm all for it because that dude, I don't think we'd be playing beyond that night had they just continued to give it to him. Or at least that game would have gone to overtime at like 45-45. Why did Detroit stop giving the ball to Jahmyr Gibbs that night?
We needed to see Jameson Williams throw.
Well, no, it wasn't even that. They put Montgomery into the game and gave Montgomery a bunch of carries.
Yeah, he did throw to Jahmyr Gibbs though.
When Montgomery was ruled in for that game after being injured, I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't. That was a massive bonus for Washington, a massive plus. Because if Gibbs gets 7 carries from Montgomery and goes for 21, he averaged 11 yards a carry in the first half. I think he averaged 8 for the game. That game may have gone a bit differently. Still, what a performance that night. Jaden, Diami, Terry on the screen. I think that's the number one most... I don't know. What's the most memorable game of the season? What's number one? Did we do this already?
We did do this already. Most people said it was either the Detroit game, that Philly comeback, the Cincinnati game. Those were the top three.
I think it's the Detroit game that I'm never going to forget. You go in on the road in the divisional round against the one seed, who's won 15 games, and you do what you did to Detroit... That was, you know, 500 yards, 45 points, ridiculous. All right, we'll end the show. Denton's got 5 burning NFL questions for me. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app. I do want to tell you that February is coming to an end, but you still have a couple of days left to take advantage of Window Nation's best opportunity of the year. 60% off on all windows and all window styles with no money down, no payments, and no interest charged for 2 full years. So you're going to pay 40% of the retail price, but you're not going to have to pay anything until the year 2027. In the meantime, with new insulated windows from Window Nation, you'll be saving big on heating bills in the winter, 2 winters, and air conditioning bills in the summer. You can save up to 30% off on utility bills with new insulated windows from Window Nation. Window Nation has over 30,000 five-star reviews from Google. They are the best when it comes to installation. 96% of their installs require no follow-up service. They've got the product, they've got the customer service, and they've got the offer, 60% off any window style you want with no money down, no payments, and no interest for 2 full years. You've got to act now. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com over the next 2 days. Mention my name. They'll come out and give you a free estimate. They'll leave you with a quote so you'll have time to make up your mind as long as you get that estimate in the next couple of days. 866-90-NATION. WindowNation.com.
They're hot. They're really hot. They're burning. It's Denton's 5 burning questions.
All right. Get after it.
All right. So question number one, this is Commanders related. We got 2 Commanders related questions. We got a couple of the just generic NFL questions. But question number one, we had heard from Adam Peters earlier in the program in our first hour, and he alluded to a lot of guys want to come back from the 2024 season, 2025. We know there was a lot of short contracts last year. Who is the number one, the most important guy that they should bring back in 2025?
I mean, we've talked about this before, and I mean, I guess I would say Bobby Wagner, because they weren't very good on defense last year, and he may have been, well, he was a top 2 or top 3 player on their defense. Per PFF, he was the 2nd best middle linebacker in the league. I don't think there's going to be a big drop-off. I think he can play at that level again. You can't lose anybody good off your defense. I mean, that's why the John Allen thing is interesting, but, you know, we understand there's a contract situation there. I don't know what Bobby Wagner is going to get on the open market. There will be interest, but I would say Wagner.
I would agree with that. I would say Wagner, and then number 2 is a very close race between Chin and Ertz. I think I would lean Ertz just because he and Jaden had a really good chemistry at the end of the year, but I did think that Jeremy Chin played really well last year, so I'd like to keep all 3 of them.
Yeah, I think that again, I would go defense for number 2 there and say Chin. But I really want Ertz back, and I think of those 3 players, if you had asked me the question, which of the players has, you know, essentially expressed the most desire to come back, it wouldn't surprise me if it's Ertz. Now, Wagner's also, remember, taking, you know, he's getting his MBA from Howard, right?
And
he was able to
so.
Do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do that online, I guess. I don't know. But anyway. All right, what else? What's
all right, Terry McLaurin needs an extension this year. It felt like the last time he got an extension, the team waited very long to the point, not where it was a distraction, but he started missing activities because he didn't have a new contract.
We didn't have a problem with that.
We did not. But yeah. I'm questioning, do you think it gets done before that? So it was June of 2022 was the last extension. Does he get this extension done before the month of June?
Do you remember the team president at the time, Jason Wright, rushing back from the West Coast to kind of take credit for getting it done? Jesus God, what a clown show this was. I think they get it done before camp.
I almost feel like they're going to get it done in the month of May.
You know what? There's no reason not to. I would certainly think that he wants to stay and they want to keep him. Because you just don't want, with a player like Terry, you don't want him to enter a season, which is the final one via, you know, the current contract. And then we know that it doesn't matter what the situation is. And we're a better organization, clearly, now. But once players start sniffing the opportunity of hitting the open market and being, you know, fawned over and bidding wars potentially taking place. And look, he'll be in free agency. He'd be a 31-year-old wide receiver, right? Yeah. Or a 30-year-old, whatever it would be. But I think it gets done before camp. That could mean in the next 3 weeks. It could mean, you know, in mid-July.
All right, rapid fire for the final three. We've kind of touched on all these topics already. Number three, where does Matt Stafford play in 2025?
I'm going to say the Rams. If they deal him, then somebody's getting a product that a guy like Sean McVay was okay with replacing, which means his best days are behind him and he's about to fall off a cliff. So I'm going to guess that that's not what it is. If they trade him, I think that's what it is. I think there's just not great options for LA. I think they work it out. These things usually get worked out.
Usually. I hate my answer. I think he plays for the Giants in 2025. Same question, different player. Myles Garrett, what uniform is he wearing in 2025?
I mean, I hope it's, you know, the burgundy or whatever we call it now and whatever the colors are.
The cherry red.
I'm going to say, look, the odds have Washington as the favorite. I'll say Washington.
I'm going to say,
I think Howie Roseman doesn't want to lose, though. That would be Philly's a good possibility. I'll say Washington.
I'm going to say Washington as well, but I'm going to have a cop-out. I'm going to say two. I think he starts the year in Cleveland and then gets moved at the deadline.
Okay.
And comes to Washington.
All right.
Final thing here. Draft coming up. Over, under 2.5 quarterbacks taken in the first round?
Under.
Under. So you'd think it's just Ward and Sanders?
Yeah, I mean, I understand the fifth year, you know, ability to get that fifth year option with a first round player. I mean, to be honest with you, the only guy in this draft that I really like is Cam Ward. Like, he's the one that when I watched last year as a college player, I thought everything he does is totally translatable to the NFL. I know that Shedeur Sanders is smart. I know that how many times did we watch games over the last couple of years and say, oh my God, get rid of the football. Throw it already. I think it's under. What do you think?
I'm going to say over. I do think that either Jackson Dart or Quinn Ewers gets drafted late.
A guy yesterday thinks Jackson Dart's the number one quarterback in the draft.
That's a bad year, man.
he had a couple moments this year when you watched Ole Miss. You're like, what are you doing? You know, one of the things I didn't like about Drake May at times is I thought he forced stuff. Now, in part because they had to. They had a terrible defense, remember those years in Chapel Hill. It's like Jaden's team at LSU. They had to score on every possession, basically, to have a chance to win the game. But I did not think that Drake May was the best decision maker all the time. By the way, I didn't feel that way about Sam Howell either. I thought Sam Howell at times felt the pressure of, if we punt, we're coming back out, you know, out onto the field down by another 7 points. And maybe that's, you know, where, you know, Jackson Dart at times felt with Ole Miss. And maybe even Shedeur Sanders, you know, at times at Colorado. But I don't know. Jackson Dart's got some moxie, though. He's got some Baker Mayfield moxie. I'll give him that.
He does, but it's like Baker Mayfield light. It's like zero sugar Baker Mayfield, where you see similarities, but you know.
Weren't you surprised
that
Bo Marchionte yesterday with us said that he's got him as the number one quarterback in the draft?
Not surprised, because I've seen other people say the same thing. I don't agree with it. I think he's fine. I don't think he's a first round quarterback.
Well, put it this way. Of the quarterbacks in the draft, help me with this. After Sanders and Ward, Dart would be next. No one else. I mean, Quinn Ewers to me is not anywhere near a day one pick, certainly. I don't think he's a night two pick, although if you're going to tell me that he was injured all year, then I'll reassess.
I actually like Quinn Ewers more than I like Jackson Dart, but I don't think either one should be drafted in the first round.
Right. All right, so I'll go under the 2.5. Chris Russell next, back tomorrow. Go Terps.